everybody knows somebody who does not like chocolate very much, but notice the phrasing, as in, you know, maybe one or two people who are not chocolate fans. Otherwise, a taste for chocolate seems to be nearly universal. And when you announce a gathering of people and chocolate, it's not too hard to fill a room with people, assuming you actually bring plenty of chocolate. That is the case at the Oregon Chocolate Festival, making its annual return to the Ashland Springs Hotel in Ashland this coming weekend. Two guests here in the studio are here to talk about the sweet event coming up. Carolina Lavanino is the Ashland Springs with the Ashland Springs Hotel and the organizer of the event, and is here in the studio. Carolina, thanks for joining us again. Good to have you here. Jeff Shepard's with us as well. He is the owner of Lily Bell Farms, a chocolate maker based in Central Point.
Yeah, Central Point, Oregon.
All right, good to have you both here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Carolina, tell us about how the Chocolate Festival got started. It's been a few years now, right?
It's the 10th year. Cannot believe that we've been doing it for so long. And
why don't you lean over to this microphone? I'm not sure what's going on, but we don't see
that one's not working.
Yeah, it's just not doing its thing.
So good morning, everybody. Oregon Chocolate Festival started 10 years ago. It's just unbelievable that such a chunk of time has already passed since we came up with this idea. And it's amazing how many people I got to meet, how many creative chocolatiers went through the doors of Ashland Springs Hotel in those years. And I remember Jeff with his wife first year with different berry jams and Easter bunnies.
Yes.
And it's just unbelievable where this company and Jeff have gone from 2004 to 2014. It's not just the festival's anniversary. Jeff's been doing it for 11 years.
11 years. Yeah.
All right, so Jeff, pull up to the microphone and let's talk to you about how does one get into the chocolate business?
Well, I guess there's many paths you can take to get into the chocolate business. Myself, I just thought it up and did it. I mean, I started out growing berries on my farm in Jacksonville and working the farmers markets and selling my fresh produce and making jams and jellies. And I thought, wow, I got to maximize all these berries. How do I do this? And having spent 20 plus years in the kitchen, I thought, well, maybe I should make some truffles out of these raspberries and Marion berries and things that I have. And so I really experimented at home and started taking, you know, my truffles to the farmers markets, and people really, really liked them. And I thought, maybe there's a business in here. And I just did all the research I could possibly do on fine chocolate. I mean, I ordered fine chocolate from all around the world and said, oh, how did they do that? That's amazing. And I taught myself how to do it.
So you had no particular mentor to show you how to do this stuff?
No. I literally just hunkered down and did it myself.
But you had a background in cooking and
oh, yeah. Oh, I'd been a chef for 25 years. So I spent my whole life in the kitchen. So, you know, playing with another single food ingredient was not a stranger to me at all. You know, I just had to learn the ins and outs and the science and the art of playing with chocolate.
After several years of doing this, though, I mean, do you still like chocolate?
I love chocolate. I eat chocolate every single day.
And how do you keep from binging on it, then?
It's the only place where I have a little bit of restraint in my life. I just try not to eat too much of it at one sitting. But it's not unusual for me to taste probably 10 different things throughout the day as we're making them. You know, you have to have quality control. You have to make sure it's exactly right. So, you know, I'm notorious for taking a bite out of something and then throwing the other half away, just walking by a tray and going, snip, trash.
A lot of self-control there then, huh?
Barely.
You said it's the one part of your life where you restrain yourself?
Yeah, I think that's it right there. That's all I got. You know, I just don't eat 10 pounds of chocolate a day.
So, Carolina, how many people like Jeff are coming to the event this year? And we're going to see if we can get a cord for this microphone so we can get this one working again.
How many chocolatiers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have usually around from 30 to 40 vendors of all kinds, from truffle makers, bar makers, to now, the last couple of years, raw chocolate has become also popular. So a couple of Oregon raw chocolatiers. And we also feature some local wineries and Rogue Creamery. I know that in the past, Jeff partnered with Rogue Creamery and have had their blue cheese truffle. So we try to really connect with the artisan food producers who create something that either goes well with chocolate, what doesn't go well with chocolate, or what includes chocolate.
And how much time do you have to spend over the course of a year pulling the people together to be able to find all the people who are going to, and are they coming from farther away as the years go by?
They do. It varies. We have some vendors that are coming this year from Eugene. In the past, we had vendors from Oregon Coast, from Portland. We are very unique because for those 10 years, I chose to not go beyond Oregon. I don't know if it's a good idea, but I know that with Ashland Springs Hotel, we have a very limited space. So I've been approached by numerous companies from Washington State, from California, and I always had to tell them, I'm sorry, this is really to feature Oregon chocolatiers and Oregon vendors. But after 10 years, I'm questioning this reasoning, and I might, because our plan is to move this festival next year to Ashland Hills Hotel and Suites, the hotel that is being renovated right now.
Right.
From 5,000 square feet at Ashland Springs, we're going to have 15,000. We're talking volume. We're talking more vendors. We're talking way more people and tickets, ticket prices going down. It's a win-win for everybody. So it's right now in planning stages. I have to make sure that the venue will be ready by the beginning of March because we always do it with the First Friday Art Walk in March. So I am pushing for it, our owners, but I would love for the Oregon Chocolate Festival to grow and become a West Coast chocolate festival. And then we can compete with the Portland Chocolate Fest and with others that have humongous venue. Because truly, after doing it for so long, it's the venue that slows us down and doesn't allow to grow.
We are talking about the Oregon Chocolate Festival coming to the Ashland Springs Hotel this weekend. Carolina Lavanino is the organizer working for the Ashland Springs Hotel. Jeff Shepard is the owner of Lily Bell Farms, a chocolate maker in the Rogue Valley. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Carolina, I think we might have gotten that microphone fixed, so let's try it again. The original purpose of the festival was to bring people to the Ashland Springs Hotel at a time when you don't tend to get that many people, wasn't that it?
That is correct. With February, when it's Valentine's, it's easy to attract people to Southern Oregon to organize different overnight packages. April is the Ashland Independent Film Festival, A Taste of Ashland. There's always something. And March was kind of a dead zone for hospital industry because it really trickles down not to hotel but all the local businesses, spas and so on, because we bring people into town. And definitely that was the original purpose, get a destination event going so that we can have more people not just from Ashland area come.
So you got lots of people like Jeff there, I'm presuming, but what are some of the non-chocolate businesses? Are there some that are there to sort of support the chocolate makers?
Yeah, as I mentioned, Rock Creamery is coming, so definitely non-chocolatiers and different wineries. We try always to make it a great weekend adventure. So we're going to have live music. Gail Wilson will be performing. There will be face painting for kids. There's always different things so that you can make it a fun event with your spouse, your family, with your girlfriends.
All right, Jeff Shepard, I want to come back to you because can you give us some basic botany here about where chocolate comes from in the world? I mean, how far back do you trace your materials?
I go right to the source. Mm-hmm. I mean, cacao is traditionally grown in what they call the 20 band, which is about 20 degrees north and south of the equator. And at this point, it's worldwide. So it's an equatorial, you know, tropical product. It is the seed of the cacao tree. They come in pods. They ferment the beans, dry the beans. And then we roast the beans, and then we make chocolate from those beans. And so, I mean, it's an agricultural product. It is a global commodity. It is traded globally, and there's a spot price every day that changes, you know. And but for myself, because I've always dealt with organics and fair trade, it's a whole different industry for me. The beans that I use are relatively about 3% of the global output. Organic beans are only about 3%. So it's a much higher price. It's a much more detailed process to obtain those kind of beans.
And what are the things that are going in non-organic production that concern people?
Oh, boy.
Standard things, pesticides and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. Pesticides that we outlaw in the United States. I mean, in Africa, they're still allowed to use DDT, which we don't, you know. And so the chemicals, chemical fertilizers, chemical, you know, insecticides are used in large cacao plantations in Africa and places like that.
So Madagascar?
And not in Madagascar, at least not the beans that I get from Madagascar. They're actually organic and fairly traded with a small producer. They come from all over the place. I've currently got raw cocoa beans sitting in my factory from Madagascar, Venezuela, Peru, Dominican Republic, and Bolivia.
Are there fluctuations in the supply sometimes? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
And quality, too.
Really?
Yeah. I always get samples before we, you know, make a megaton purchase. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I want a metric ton of these beans, but it's a new harvest. So every harvest is different depending upon the climate and, you know, what's going on that year. And so you have to find out what that's like. And sometimes you just turn them down. You go, these aren't that good. They're not as good as they were last year. And because you're not there to harvest them and you're not there during the process, you don't exactly know why. You just know that these aren't as good as the ones before. So maybe we'll look for something from another country, you know.
By now, it's all really practice. But I mean, when you were first getting into the chocolate making game, how did you know that the raw materials were good enough for you? I mean, how did you know that this was the stuff that was going to make good chocolate?
I didn't.
Did you make bad chocolate then?
I made a lot of bad chocolate. I would make very bad chocolate. And we'd go, there's something wrong with this. Is it us or is it what we're dealing with? You know, and then you just branch out. And I know a lot of people in the industry now. So as I got to know more and more people, I would ask. I go, where are you getting good beans from? You know, who's got the good stuff? Where do you get the good stuff? And eventually I was turned on to those sources, you know.
How difficult is it to work with? Two things. I'll save that question for later. The first one is raw material to finished product. When you talk about buying a metric ton of beans, what does that translate to in finished bars or truffles or something?
Well, it depends. I mean, at a good ratio, when we get beans, you have to you know, clean them, sort through them, throw away the bad beans that are cracked, beans that are, you know, half cut or whatever. And then after we roast them and crack them and remove the shells, you've got about a 12 to 15% loss automatically of just the shell. You know, so we're losing that just in mulch. We use them for mulch in gardens. And then depending on how much sugar you want to add, and each bean is very different. So as we go along, we're like, okay, well, this bean is really rich and it's got a great fermentation. Maybe we should make it a 70% or a 75. So you're looking at 70% cocoa beans and the other 30% is just sugar. So when you add those two together, you're looking at quite a bit of chocolate.
And so how difficult is it to work with the raw material? You just mentioned the process of culling them out. That sounds like it takes quite a bit of time, right?
Yeah, there. Yeah. We do it by hand, and we do it in small batches. I'm still a small batch chocolatier. Don't let the idea of a metric ton get away from you. It takes me about a year to go through a metric ton of raw cocoa beans.
All right.
I only do it once a year from each place, you know. So we hand sort them, we pick out the bad beans, we do the thing, and then we roast them. And then you have to remove the shells. And that has been the biggest challenge on a small scale, is how do you remove the shells from the nib? And I literally spent 2.5 years tossing them in a steel bowl on my loading dock with a fan. You know, old school, blowing the chaff off. And then we invented a winnower out of like PVC pipe and, you know, a shop vac on blow, you know, and we've done that. And now we've got a shaker with screens that we've built and modified that we can do it a little bit faster. But it still takes hours and hours to get just, you know, like 40 pounds of nibs.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really tedious process.
We are talking about the Oregon Chocolate Festival and the process of chocolate making with Jeff Shepard from Lily Bell Farms and Carolina Lavanino from the Ashland Springs Hotel, where the Oregon Chocolate Festival is being held. Maybe you've got a question or a story about chocolate of your own. Join us here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So walk us through, what are some of the things that a person can do? I mean, it's not like you just walk through the door and instantly are handed chocolate and chomp it down, or maybe it is, but what are some of the other activities that people can get into at the Oregon Chocolate Festival?
We've got, as I mentioned before, the First Friday Art Walk on Friday. We also created what is called Chef Demos. We have a portable kitchen in the hotel lobby, and quite a few local chefs will be demonstrating different things with chocolate throughout the weekend, and that is free to the public, so people are welcome to come to the lobby and watch them. We have a great event that sells out each year, is the Chocolate Makers Dinner Friday night, and that's our executive chef from Lark's Restaurant, Damon Jones, puts together a four-course dinner. And then on Saturday and Sunday, between different businesses offering tastings in downtown Ashland. We also have Harry and David Country Village store offering tastings throughout the weekend. There's workshops at the festival. And of course, if you buy the ticket to the festival, you get to meet all the vendors and buy from them, taste their product, talk with them. It's a great opportunity to have in one building so many chocolatiers.
Is it sold out? I haven't even asked that yet.
The festival itself is not sold out. It never is sold out prior. So many people purchase tickets at the door. Mm-hmm. Chocolate Makers Dinner is very close to selling out. We have also a party at another hotel of ours, Lithia Springs Resort. And it's a very fun party, already sold out. It's facials and martinis.
Many women are going to that one. do you have swooning couches or lots of other places to sit for people who are just getting overwhelmed by consuming chocolate?
Well, we do have lots of seating all over the hotel, and we do see people in some kind of coma after a while.
It's the it's the chocolate coma. You see them; they come in really aggressive, and they're all like, "Oh, I have lots of chocolate.
I want to try this, this,
yeah,
this,
yeah,
this,
yeah, yeah." And then 2 hours later, you see those exact same people, and they just have this glazed look. You know? They can't eat another bite.
So, what would be some advice from a chocolatier for how to pace yourself at something like that? You're just surrounded by all these things. You want to try them all. It's like any buffet or smorgasbord.
Buy it and eat it later.
Yeah, exactly. Make the purchase. You know, take your time. I mean, if the vendor is offering you a sample, you know, don't just move straight from blue cheese to chocolate. Mm. You know, if there's other vendors in there, you know, providing mouth combinations that you may not enjoy. You may not be able to enjoy that chocolatier's chocolate if you've just eaten a chunk of blue cheese from the Rogue Creamery. You know, go have a glass of wine in between or a glass of water.
Something to cleanse the palate.
Yeah, yeah. Give it a moment. Don't just rush from table to table eating things. You know, take your time. Pace yourself.
Let us take a call. We have Mark in Reading on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking chocolate with Jeff Shepherd and Carolina Lavanino.
Good morning. Yes, I have two questions. One, does unprocessed cocoa degrade over time? And two, what amount of caffeine does cocoa have in it as opposed to coffee or tea?
All right, so the process of decay of the chocolate and how much caffeine. Thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it.
Okay, I guess that's for me.
Yep.
Finished chocolate, actually tempered chocolate in a bar, once it's been made into chocolate and processed and made into a bar that's perfectly tempered, can last up to 18 months, you know, before it may lose its temper. And holding a temper has everything to do with storage. Cocoa beans themselves can be stored for years and years, kept cool and dry. You know, so before we even process them, you can hold on to them for quite a while as long as they're kept cool and dry.
But did they start getting moldy or strange at any point?
Well, only if they get wet. Uh-huh. You know, they can grow mold. You don't want, just like any agricultural product, you don't want to get it wet, you know, because it's been dried. Mm-hmm. And once it gets wet, you're just asking for bacteria to grab it and start growing on it, which we've seen, you know. Yeah. We've learned the hard way.
Right.
You know, don't get them wet. That'd be bad.
So Mark's other question was about caffeine content.
Actually, chocolate doesn't have a high caffeine content. It has a very low caffeine content. 1 ounce of dark chocolate is equal to like maybe a half a cup of decaffeinated coffee. It's not the caffeine that gets people in chocolate. It's the theobromine and the, well, I think they've isolated about 400 different compounds in chocolate. There's a lot of chemicals in chocolate that just naturally occur, a lot of alkaloids and things like that, and everybody has a different reaction to them. But the main one is the theobromine. That's the one that makes you feel good. It's a serotonin antagonist. It's the one that, you know, elevates your mood, makes you feel good. That's why they call chocolate the love drug.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Let's talk about some of the interesting dishes that you've prepared over the years, because it seems like people are always trying to combine. People love chocolate so much they want to combine it with just about anything. And so I don't know if you get to the point of like chocolate-covered asparagus or something like that. Certainly had chocolate. That's the next thing, right? Chocolate-covered bacon. I know you had a few.
Oh, yeah. No. We've done the bacon thing. Yeah, we sell a lot of that. That seems to be a comfort food for people for some reason. You know, everything's good with bacon.
Right.
And we found a way to do that with chocolate. We've certainly done that. Our blue cheese truffle has just been a runaway hit for like 8 years. That took a lot of experimentation. You know, we played with blue cheese from the Rogue Creamery for 6 months before we found the proper combination of chocolate and cheese, the ratio, a little bit of toasted almond to make it taste good. We try a lot of different things. I mean, our epic fail is when we tried to do dehydrated pickles. Yeah, that may be the worst thing we've ever made, ever.
Uh-huh.
It was one of those things where all three people in the kitchen had to taste it all at the same time to dare each other. And we all ran to the sink at the same time, you know, to wash our mouths out, going, no, bad, bad, bad.
So that one never left the kitchen. That never went to an outside focus group.
No, it didn't leave the kitchen. But, I mean, outside focus groups are good for us. When I create a new flavor, if you come into my store in Central Point and I'm experimenting that day, I always present them to the customer. I'll see people out there and I've made something new and I'm like, here, try this. What do you think? I'm looking for an opinion. You know, and if they wrinkle their nose, then maybe it's not very good. You know.
Are there things you did kind of on a dare and they ended up working anyway? I mean, things that you didn't really intend to be big sellers?
Not really. Well, honestly, the blue cheese truffle was not a dare. It was, you know, one of those things where the creamery came to me and said, do you think you could make a truffle using our blue cheese? And I said, I don't think so, but, well, give me your cheese. And literally, I mean, every time we'd make a new batch, we'd think, well, this isn't very good, but let's take it to the cheesemakers. And by the time we got to the one that we sell now, they didn't even want to taste it. Mm. It was one of those, this isn't another experiment, is it? We don't want to try this.
So, Carlina, what are the days of the chocolate festival?
March 7th, 8th, and 9th. March 7th is the evening, First Friday Art Walk, Chocolate Makers Dinner. And then Saturday and Sunday, all the chocolatiers, all the expo at the festival.
All kinds of fun stuff drenched in chocolate at the Ashland Springs Hotel. Carlina Lavanino is the organizer of the Oregon Chocolate Festival. Jeff Shepard, the owner of Lily Bell Farms, thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a short break and come back with Garrison Keillor.